This podcast is brought to you by Northern Motor Group. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio. I'm waving to you, Josh. Good evening. Hello. We're back. It's another Thursday night, big Thursday night of programming, by the way. We've got some fantastic efforts. Apologies, no Louise Taffer, so Josh Parrish is in the chair. We have some interesting news to cover. We have some stories about tomorrow, big evening of football on FNR. We're calling a game, and absolutely, a very special game, and also getting a chance to speak to someone who's been very much in the news, and we'll talk about that very, very shortly. In the next hour, we'll take a look at the first round of, or the round of A-League matches that are taking place. Very big one happening at the Marvel Stadium. I'm still getting to grips with that. Do we know if they're bringing the seats in for this particular occasion, or are they leaving them where they normally sit?
I would hope they're bringing the seats in. I haven't gotten any formal confirmation of that, but considering the size of
AFL,
this...
AFL X or something happening, which I have nothing...
I will not speak of that.
Well, neither will I. But I just did, didn't I? That's the only reason I thought they might be playing with the chairs. Musical chairs. Look, Marvel is not one of my favourite venues. And there are, look, they've tried very, very hard to make it a fine football stadium. But they started the wrong way when they built it on a car park. And one of the other great problems they had was they put a roof in. And they kept the roof closed for most of the day, so that doesn't help the grass to grow. It's been a long, long time coming. Some people say they actually love playing there. I don't know too many of them. I actually don't like it as a place to watch the football either. If you want to watch a game, Amy Park for me is the premier venue in Victoria as of this moment. Agree or disagree, Josh?
Absolutely agree. Amy Park has the best atmosphere. I'd rather a derby sell out there than a half full to three quarters full Marvel Stadium. But
well, you mentioned it. It's a derby. Melbourne derby. Pivotal one for City. In fact, you could say it's a pivotal one for both clubs.
Absolutely it is. I mean, Warren Joyce, we've heard reports this week that he's on thin ice after that unappealing display away to Newcastle.
Look, I've had to fend off an array of calls and posts from City fans who say, look, George, take off the crimson lens sunnies that you wear and see it in the cold, hard light of day. Do you find the football attractive? Look, the answer, as I have said time and time again, is no. When we're not winning, when we're not playing well, it's not the attractive football I want to see. And people say to me, oh, yeah, but Bruno would have made a difference. Well, he didn't early, right? And then the other thing is they say, it would have been great if we had Nevio. We don't. So what is this business of looking back in the rearview mirror? If looking back was that important, the rearview mirror would be, 100 feet by 100 feet and in Super HD. It isn't. It's very much smaller. So let's look forward. There's a squad of young guys there. They're learning their caper. They're doing the best they can. It's not easy. As fans, the more grief we give them, the less chance we give them to play with an abandon and a freedom that they need to play good football. I don't know anyone who can play any game, or even referee for that matter, if your body is full of tension and anxiety. How can you perform?
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I had the privilege of seeing the City youth team in action last weekend down at Lang Warren.
What a cracking game that was.
What a game. 3-2.
Take us through it. Well, especially the last 5 minutes.
Those last 5 minutes were utterly thrilling. And the crowd was getting really into it. Lang Warren fighting back from two goals down. But Rami Nagerine broke hearts at the last. Grog deep cross to the back post. McLaren in the Lang Warren goal could only parry it out, and Rami Nagerine tapped it in from the angle to give City a win with virtually the last kick of the game. So there was a lot of emotion in that one.
And this is the first game, if my memory serves me correctly, of Scott Miller, who's come back, a former A-League coach of the Newcastle Jets. He's been in, I think, in Denmark. Mm. Yeah, he's been getting a reassessing his life. He's a professional. He's a football pro. And I think what he's doing there is super exciting. So that would have been a grand occasion, especially to take on one of the, you know, the smart young outfits in Victoria. That is the Melbourne City youth team. They've been playing some really good football, and they've got some very exciting young players. For me, Moody Najjar, Remy Najarin, and some of the others there, they've got something about them.
Oh, absolutely. And Dylan Price was, or Pierre-Yas, was very...
He was
very, very impressive. I thought he was City's best player on the day. Lang Warren was... they were very unfortunate. I think there was a bit of a gap, obviously, there in terms of technique, because City have some of the finest young players in the country in that youth setup. But Scott Miller set them up very well. They pressed high up the park, forced City into making some errors and played with a lot of heart. So it was a really great battle. And if City are looking for some inspiration this weekend to turn their form around, maybe Warren Joyce should cast his eye over that group of young players who certainly have a lot of talent in their ranks.
I don't doubt the talent. I want to know, how did they play against the more mature bodies of the Lang Warren team? Because Scott's gone out there and found some players who've been around and really made an impression in the past. How did the youngsters from City fit in and compete against the bigger bodies?
Well, that task was made all the more difficult by a referee who let the game flow, and I don't think the City bench was particularly keen on that particular approach. But they did cop some big challenges. The game did get a little heated in the second half. I think both teams got a little carried away, and there were some confrontations off the ball that the referee had to get involved in. But I was impressed particularly with Najarin, who took two quite big hits early on from Leek Burgess in the Wang Warren backline, who was clearly, you know, out to put physical pressure on him. But he didn't react. He just kept about his business, and he ended up with two goals on the day, despite maybe not playing, you know, his best game we've seen from him. He ended up with two goals and an assist, so you can't really argue with that. And I was impressed with the vast majority of the players and how they stood up to that physical pressure.
Speaking of pressure, there's an awful lot of it building around this game at Marvel on Saturday night. It's Melbourne City desperate for a win, and it's victory that's been settling and been unsettled with a couple of injuries. Honda did play last week. Toivonen didn't play. Now, will we see the combo reunited on Saturday night, which would mean it'd be the first time that unit is going to face a City side, because they Toivonen wasn't there for the opening game of the season that City won, and Honda wasn't there, I think, for the 1-1 draw.
No, you're quite right, George.
And so, interesting times.
Absolutely. Ola Toivonen, perhaps, contextually speaking, Victory's most important player, because they don't have a striker
ruthless
like him in the squad, whereas they do have some pretty nice depth in midfield to cover for Honda when he's out, even though that no one is the same calibre, of course.
Now, I don't think there's another player in the league that can match up to Toivonen when he's playing and he's fit.
He has something different about him. Not only does he have the ability in front of goal, he's got that touch, that technique to bring other players into the game. I mean, he's almost nonchalant in the way he goes about things. You sort of see him drifting around, but he gets through his share of work. He always, you know, you think it'd be easy to mark a big slow guy like him, but he's got
fast brain.
First yards in your head, as they say, and yeah. Ola Toivonen certainly has that at his disposal. So a Victory have been cautious with these experienced foreigners, bringing them back from injuries, and they've had a lot of them this season amongst, you know, Baena, Niedermeyer in particular, Honda, Toivonen.
I tell you what, Baena to me is really impressed. I didn't think he'd be as good as he or as advertised. He's better than that. The guy that, it's always amazing, you say something about one of these players and they come back and they haunt you. But the guy that has struggled to get on the pitch has been Niedermeyer. Yeah. So is he available? We'll have to check the ins and outs a little bit later on when we speak to Lynchy, who, by the way, is joining us for his segment, as he does every Thursday, called The Journos. We're also going to take a look at, I think it's important, a little bit of an in-depth look at the Matildas and how they might line up for the Cup of Nations tournament, which will see our women take on New Zealand. We're going to take on South Korea and, wait for it, Argentina. And Argentina matches at Amy Park. I think the match against South Korea will be... is the South Korea in Sydney?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, New Zealand one is being played where?
I think up in Brisbane, if I'm not mistaken. So I'll have to double check those. Check.
Okay. So a squad chosen by a brand new Matildas man, the new boss of the Matildas, of course, Ante Milicic. He hasn't seen the girls. I mean, he knows of their reputation. He's seen them play, but he hasn't seen them. I don't think they've met yet, have they?
No, and I think the Matildas are a little bit, nervous about meeting this guy who's going to shape their international future for the World Cup.
Is it true that they were so nervous they asked him not to appear in Sydney and in Melbourne, but to actually make the journey to Brizzy?
I'm not sure what the motivation was behind that, but he did face the media today up in Brisbane. And
was David Gallop there?
Yeah, David Gallop did not face the media, I don't believe.
Is that right? I did see some photos. Yeah, I'm just wondering.
I don't think he took many questions anyway. But Milicic did say he wants to bring the focus back onto the football and away from the scandals.
Well, like I said, I'm coming in and the girls are going to have my trust from the start. Okay, so when we go there, I'll set the standards, and I know I've done my research. I've spoken to people that have been part of the staff, both previous and currently, and there'll be no issues here. Again, the focus is going back on the football, and we look forward to the games coming up.
A new voice in the dressing room from the Matildas, that's Ante Milicic. And as he said, he's wiped the slate clean, and he's picked a squad. Now let's see how you're going to play.
Yeah, and that squad's an interesting one. I think some of the hard decisions have been made for him due to injury problems.
Yep, there are a spate of injuries.
Yeah, the likes of Katrina Gorry, Larissa Crummer, Kaya Simon, all out with injuries. So the squad almost picks itself, although I think Michelle Heyman, perhaps after her good season for Adelaide, a little unlucky to miss out as one of the more experienced heads.
That might be a fair comment. Good to see young Alex Chidiak being chosen from overseas, and A.V. Luick. So some seasoned players who know how to win a championship. They've been brought into the squad. So that's most encouraging for a tournament that suddenly takes on a slightly different look, doesn't it? Because it's very important now to see how the women gel with their new boss.
Oh, absolutely. And it's taken on such an extra importance because of the new coach coming in. Originally, it was just going to be finalising a few things. The last look at Australian fans will have at the Matildas before they go off. But now everybody will be looking with interest to see if Milicic keeps the same sort of game plan as Stojicic, if he rocks the boat and brings in his own ideas, if it's a blend of the two, and how the girls fare under him and how they're motivated by him.
That's a very good point. I'm thinking a blending of styles. He's been the coach, of course, an assistant coach under Ange Postecoglou. He's been an assistant also under the current coach Graham Arnold. He's looked after the Joeys. Very interesting to see which style of play he thinks will suit the quality of players that we have.
And just clarifying on the fixtures there, we were right.
Yes.
Match day one, we'll see the Matildas take on New Zealand at Kogarah in Sydney.
Okay,
Argentina playing Korea on the same day.
I hope the pitch at Jubilee gets the roller on it.
Yes.
Because I don't think it was in the best of condition, and it should have been much better, especially for the women and for a prestige W League grand final. I would have thought the conditions would have been much better.
Agreed. And Bobby Despotovsky said as much after the game, although he wasn't making excuses.
No,
he was asked the question.
No.
And you'll get double bang for your buck on these games because you'll actually see the other two teams play each other. So it's a double header on each occasion. So Argentina playing Korea and the Matildas taking on New Zealand on the 28th at Kogarah. On the 3rd of March, New Zealand will play Argentina before the Matildas play Korea Republic up at Suncorp in Brisbane. Match day 3 is the 6th of March. Korea play New Zealand at Amy Park before the Matildas play Argentina. And that's the one I've got my eye on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the one I'm looking forward to seeing. Speaking of things that we are looking forward to, tomorrow night, a special evenings on FNR. We're going out to CB Smith Reserve for a very special occasion. You want to tell us about it, Josh?
Yeah, so George, sorry, run that by me again. I was tomorrow, the producer speaking my ear.
That's
George.
All right. It's CB Smith Reserve. We have a special presentation coming up. Take us through it.
Oh, so where FNR will be calling Pasco Vale's first home game of
will
the season.
Will you be calling?
I will be alongside Athos Syrianos.
Okay.
So two of the evening's crew down there will be doing our evening show from the 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. and then we'll be joined by some very, very special guests.
That's right. We have, believe it or not, the man who has championed for the release of Hakim Al-Arabi, Craig Foster, is in town and will be at the game, as will Hakim. So an opportunity for fans and for the football public to get along to CB Smith Reserve and to get there, support him, support the cause and support the game. And it'd be a special occasion for all. We'll get a chance to interview both Craig and Hakim, and you'll hear that on FNR.
Yes, our pre-match build-up will begin from 20 past 7 Australian Eastern Daylight Time, live from CB Smith Reserve in Fawkner. And I'm very much looking forward to speaking to Craig Foster and Hakim, two real heroes. Well,
you're
in
one of the first in the country to champion his release. Mm. I think it was back in November.
Yeah, we were speaking
you were
to
approached. Was it did Toner?
Yes,
did,
Lou Toner.
Lou Toner approach you.
The president of Pasco Vale came on FNR to speak about Hakim's situation,
plight.
His plight, and we were on it from the very beginning. But it was so great to see Craig Foster take on that cause and really champion it worldwide.
Oh, let me ask you. How do you feel now after something that you did way back in November of last year? It's ended so positively. Are you excited by it?
Oh, absolutely.
Are you honoured to have been part of that journey?
I mean, I think the emotion is relief more than anything,
yep,
because we all feared the worst for Hakim. It didn't look good. And all of a sudden, it happened so suddenly, we weren't involved in the backroom negotiations that actually secured his release. But hopefully we did our small part to publicise the cause
and
put some pressure on Thailand and Bahrain to secure his release. And it's just such a massive relief to see him back safe in Australia, reunited with his wife and able eventually. We won't put any pressure on him, of course, to play football again when he's physically and mentally ready, and that's what he loves to do.
Speaking of physically and mentally ready, is Michael Lynch with us yet?
In just a moment, we'll be speaking to Michael Lynch. But first, you can get in touch with the show at any time by giving us a call on 99 44 99 99. And our favourite Melbourne City fan, Damien in Cranbourne, has done just that. Damien, welcome to Evenings on FNR once again.
Evening, boys. George, how are we?
I'm very anxious. This is the time of the week when I look forward to a very important game. And you want something really positive to emerge. You want a really good result. You want a great performance, actually. And both sides, though, are looking for a win. So, it won't be easy, especially in the form we've been over the last week or two, or three.
No, it won't be easy to get this, George. We should have won last week. I was up in Newcastle. It was nice to get up there, George.
What did you make of the game? I thought for about 75, 80 minutes we were there, and suddenly Ernie Merrick made a couple of changes, and those fresh legs, those young legs, well, the young legs of Shantness, really seemed to make a difference. Jair jumped on a couple of, possession errors by a couple of players and turned them into winning moves for his Jets club.
Yeah, he certainly did. I mean, we made a change, but it was too late, wasn't it?
Yeah. When did you think, oh my God, it's turned sour? Because early on, it looked like they might get the result they wanted.
I sort of after half time, obviously we scored and then they got one. I thought there's got to be a second one coming after they put so much pressure on. Sorry, a third one, may I say?
Yeah, but it didn't.
So
it didn't happen.
So much pressure on.
But it didn't happen, did it?
No, unfortunately not. But big derby, I'll be going along, George. You'll be able to see me and all the Melbourne City supporters in the active area, George.
What's your prediction for the game?
2-1.
2-1, did you say?
Yes, big,
okay.
City.
Okay, all right, okay.
The
question I have for you is can our new striking combo get things going? Will we see Shayon Harrison start? And will we see Jamie McLaren score for a third time running?
I think he'll score the two goals and Shayon Harris will put in the great performance like he does
Fantastic.
Like we've done the last 2 weeks.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. See you Saturday night.
Look forward
night.
To coming into the chairman's lounge as well. Thank you, George.
Thanks, Damo. He's making a pitch for that, and we'll see what we can do and make it happen. It'd be great before the end of the season.
Yeah, and Melbourne City, so much riding on this game. I mean, regardless of form, it seems like City and even Hart back in the day were able to pick themselves up for the derby matches.
Yeah, look, it seems like the form guide goes out the door. Mm. And I suppose that's at the very essence what a derby's all about. You know, you forget what happened the day before, the week before, the 3 months before. This is it. This is now. It's all about the bragging rights for the city. But I'll tell you what, the Victory fans will not be lying down. They've been sizing this moment up. I think Nick Dabano has been doing an extra session at the gym. and I don't know about Athos Syrianos because I think he's preoccupied with his preparations to help you tomorrow night at Pascoe Vale. I'm actually going to come and try and be as much a provocateur as possible. But I'm going Saturday night. I don't readily like going to Marvel. As I said to you earlier, I don't like it as a venue. But I'm going to go because I need to support our team, and that's what it's about. If you're a supporter, you've got to turn out. You've got to do the thing you want. It's going to hurt me if we don't get to play the way we want to. But look, it's on for young and old. That's what derbies are about, and I'm excited.
Well, Shara has come through on the Facebook Live and said City were absolutely cowardly in their performance last week against the Jets. They will put in a big performance against Victory to make up for it.
All right, I'm going with that. We'll forget the cowardly moments and turn it on. We'll be a la tigrish. Can you imagine? No. What we haven't got at City and haven't had really is an enforcer. You know, Victory has always had an enforcer. They had Kevin Muscat in the days when he was playing. And he made sure that, you know, he knew, or all the other players knew, that he was going to leave a boot in. Adrian Zara to this day can't forget the boot that, yes. Kevin left in his shin and in his knee. But, look, we don't have an enforcer, so we play a different style of football. I don't want to see possession for possession's sake. I want to see if we have the ball, I want us to do something with it. There are enough players there, but equally I must say that that on its day, Victory has a squad that could win the championship. And that's as simple as one can say it. If Toivonen turns up, if Honda is back and fit, and I know he is back, but is he in the same state of mind and fitness as he was in the first half a dozen weeks when he looks so wonderful on the ball? And of course there are some wonderful other players. Kostas Barbarouskas loves to play against City.
Oh, yeah.
And he has this lovely vision of hitting the ball in the back of the net. I'd like to change that, but it's just something in the moment that I can't do. I'm not allowed, like George Colombaris, to run onto the ground, you see. So, and I'm a little bit more reticent now that I'm chair of FNR, so you've got to be more responsible and more aware. You can't be silly. Mind you, sometimes you feel like you need to be just to show it, to fly the flag. But no. Speaking of flying the flag, is Lynchy with us yet?
He is. We do have the legendary age journo Michael Lynch on the line for our weekly journo segment.
He is wearing the biggest smile because, you know what? He was watching, as was I, the game during the week against Dortmund at Wembley.
Hello?
Yes, mate. Were you there? Were you watching? Were you as excited as I was?
Well, I certainly wasn't at Wembley.
No, but you...
We were transported there, mate. I only grew up three tube stops away, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah. Northwest London. Wembley Stadium was three tube stops down the line from Willesden Green, or two from Dolly Field, depending on which one I use. So I was pretty close. And, of course, we were all transported marvellously. I mean, what a terrific second half. I was actually just talking about it with one of my brothers. We all support Spurs, as you can imagine. And I rang
intelligent family is all I can say, really. Yeah, intelligent. Yeah. Family.
I rang the UK the other night, and... he said he was watching it with his sons, and he turned to them at half time and said, nil-nil. I'll take this now at half-time. But the second half was a fantastic performance, really good. And once again, Tottenham finished the game really strongly. It's been a hallmark, I think, of the team in the Pochettino era that they've won more games in the last sort of 10, 20 minutes than most teams in the Premier League have. And they certainly did it in the Champions League with those two goals in the last 10 against Dortmund, you know, Vertonghen and what have you coming through, and then Lloriente right towards the end. So, you know, a fantastic effort. You'd have to say that they should be in the last eight now. I mean, especially if they can get one goal in Germany, it would mean Borussia Dortmund have to get five, and that's just not happening.
Tell me something. Do you feel, as so many people are saying, that Son may well be a contender for Player of the Year?
Footballer of the Year in England, he has to be, doesn't he? He surely has to be right up there as perhaps Asia's greatest ever player. There's been some great Japanese players, you know, Nakata, Hidetoshi Nakata, and Shunsuke Nakamura was very good in his day at Celtic, and of course Keisuke Honda, and you know, Park, who was at Manchester United, the other Korean boy.
But he's prolific.
Son is just scoring goals, making things happen, and he's still quite young. I mean, it depends if you want to put the Australia in Asia. I guess Harry Kewell and Mark Viduka would have claims to be in that conversation as Asian players, because Australia was in the AFC in their era. But, you know, most people would probably look at Son and say he's like from Korea, and that probably qualifies more. But he's been in fantastic form, and God bless him. I mean, there was a period, I think not this season, but at the start of last season, where he was talked about leaving.
That's right.
Was there going to be a place for him in Pochettino's plan? So us who support the Lily Whites, mate, we've got to be entirely forever grateful that there was a place in Poch's plans for him.
What do you make of his transfer, £22 million? How does it stack up now?
That from Borussia Dortmund, wasn't it? At the
cheap.
Well, looks like fantastic business now, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mr. Levy, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, he'd have to be worth double that. Look, and Tottenham and Levy in particular, they get a lot of stick in the English media for their transfer deals. But, you know, Levy's a businessman. Spurs are a business as well as a football club. They all are now at the highest level. And he's determined that the club is not going to live way beyond its means, and they're not going to pay over the top for players. He famously negotiates down to the last second in any window, and we haven't bought a player in the last two. And you know, I kind of admire that. I think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if you trust and believe in your youth system, as Spurs always say they do, and the proof is in the pudding because they brought players through, well, you know, trust in it and don't just go out and make a panic buy for the sake of it. I mean, I think Moussa Sissoko looked like a panic buy at the time, $30 million from Newcastle, but it's such is the magic of Pochettino. He turned him into a more than half decent looking player. He looks like that player who played for France in Euro 2016,
Correct.
Which was divisions better than he ever looked for Newcastle.
Well, Lynchy, if we can move the conversation along
From Spurs,
No, don't.
If we move the conversation along to the Australian side of things, should Melbourne City take a leaf out of Spurs' book and trust in their youth academy ahead of this game against Victory?
Well, they have been. I mean, you know, City get a lot of stick, but I remember it was only 3 or 4 weeks ago when they were chasing what would have been a very deserved draw in Wellington, where I think they dominated the second half. They finished the game with a front three of Moody Najjar, Rami Nagerine and Lachlan Wales, aged 21, 19 and 18. How many teams in the A-League have ever done that? fielded three strikers that young in a game playing together, even if it's only for the last 20 minutes, half an hour. And you know, they obviously, you know, people say, oh, well, Warren Joyce's hand was forced last year and he had to use Arzani, but he did. Whether it was forced or not, he did. And Arzani came through and played really, really well. And, you know, Nathaniel Atkinson got a very good goal last season. Now, I don't think he's quite made the progress people might have expected, but he is in the Oli Roux kind of radar. Lachlan Wales came to the club as a 20-year-old who'd, I don't think, ever been on a winning team in the A-League. He hadn't played many games. He was at the Mariners, of course. And look at him. He looks, you know, every bit like a proper A-League player. So I think City have trusted to an extent, and maybe they should and will in the future trust more.
There's a presser coming up tomorrow morning. Warren Joyce and will it be Kevin Muscat talking about their derby?
Yeah, I think they're doing it separately, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
Unless
okay.
plans have changed, and I haven't looked at my emails. I know that Joyce is up very early about 9 a.m. or something.
What do you make of City's acquisition, the latest acquisition, another club, a seventh team to add to the global family?
It's a third division team in China, isn't it?
Second division.
Have they bought the club outright or just a percentage? I can't
remember now. I believe they have the club.
Yeah, well, it's sort of, you know, Chengdu, big city. Mind you, all the cities there are big in terms of population and land mass.
And Scott Munn's going.
Is that officially been
yes,
announced?
Yes, that's right. Scott Munn is now the, will be as of April, the new CEO at Sichuan.
I did try to ring him the other day and I did get the overseas tone. So,
and also the person who's stepped up the succession plan at Bandura is that the former commercial and operations manager, Brad Rouse will be the man who steps up and becomes CEO.
Oh, well, is that I haven't had that as an official announcement.
No, that's as official as you'll ever get it.
You know, I did get some mail that this would happen.
It's come from the source. Yeah, no, I got the mail early this morning.
Did you? No, well, I sort of heard a bit about it, but I don't like to just report rumour normally.
No. There was a suggestion they might do something really brave and grab a guy called Peter Philopoulos, who was of course the CEO at Perth Glory. Now that he was back in Victoria, but no, they've gone down this particular pathway, and it remains now. It's a big step and a big challenge for Brad. But nothing much shirks. He won't shirk from the challenge. I'll tell you what, he will enjoy
in
it.
In terms of the corporate culture, you'd have to say that's a good thing, isn't it? That if you get within the system and you work within the parameters,
you get rewarded
and tick the KPIs that you're expected to meet, which may be a different set of KPIs than that which the general public are hoping for. But if you do it, you get rewarded. And, good on Scott for a move within the CFG. And Brad, great to see him step up. I've been rather more preoccupied with Matilda's various other
Did you make the presser this morning,
well.
By the way? Did you make the presser in Brisbane?
I didn't go to Brisbane, no, but I did the teleconference with Ante Milicic.
What did you make of it?
1:30. Well, you know, it wasn't quite move along now. There's nothing to see here. But it was sort of... you know, he played kind of forward defensive strokes really to everything, didn't he? You know, I mean, he's not going to come out with anything controversial at this juncture. What is interesting, of course, there's been a cyclone of discontent around the Matildas for the last 4 weeks. But, of course, there's a cyclone heading of a different kind heading for Brisbane this weekend as they prepare to take on, for this Cup of Nations tournament. So they're going to have to be on weather watch as much as anything else.
What did you make of the squad? He hasn't met the girls. A lot of it is going
well,
from
did
the preparation.
Ask him how much of this is actually your squad, you know, because you only took over on Monday.
Correct.
And
yep.
He said he'd taken guidance from other people, but he said once he knew the job was in the offing, which, you know, it was obviously from middle January onwards. He had started to do some homework because he'd considered himself a chance for it. So he said he took counsel from those close to the group. But in the end, he made the decisions. He brought back a few girls that hadn't been in the mix for some time. He said it was important to reward current form. He stuck with Lisa Devanna, even though she must be nearing the end. And, you know, her future will be a big call, whether she goes to the World Cup or not at 34, isn't she? Something like that. But he stuck with her, and when asked why, he just said experience is the key. She averages a goal in every three games, and she's meant so much to the Matildas for so long that he feels he certainly owes it to her and others to have them in camp, get to know them.
She has a fantastic
capable of.
She has a terrific combative spirit, and when you see her and she's in the mood, she can make a difference. And I think that's what he's banking on.
Well, she can. I mean, whether she's a starter or an impact player now, I wouldn't know, really. I mean, once you get to that age, you tend to be used either for the first 50, 55 minutes of a game, or you tend to get brought on with 25 or 30 to go. But, yeah, look, you know, all his choices. I mean, I just think the biggest problem, Ante Milicic, who I've known for a long time, both as a player and as a coach, and he was terrific at Melbourne Heart, when you remember?
Yeah,
he
that's
the
right.
Number two.
Yeah. I actually thought he had a chance to get anointed as the coach just before Johnny A.
Many did, and it looked, he certainly seemed to have more coaching experience than Johnny Aloisi at the time, but, you know, politics or choice, whatever they were, or just they interviewed them both and John might have interviewed better. I don't really know at the time. But John got the nod, and Ante ended up forging quite a good, terrific career as Angie's number two.
Yeah, no, he's
for
a terrific
such a long time. But he's an excellent bloke, a fantastic coach. He prepares absolutely rigorously, coordinated a lot of the forward scouting, the tactical stuff under Ange. He won't leave any stone unturned. The issue is going to be just how dysfunctional or otherwise the group may be after the issues they've had to deal with over the last month.
Yeah, spot on.
Well, one stone that will remain unturned, at least for an FFA perspective, is the potential investigation into Stage's sacking.
Yeah,
and David Gallop said that's not going.
Says Gallop. Yeah, well, what do you expect, eh? You know, they pulled up the drawbridge from the incident they decided to do it. And to conduct an investigation would now be a partial admission that we was wrong.
And
you know, they always say don't ever hold an investigation unless you know the outcome in advance.
Correct.
Maybe they're a little bit worried about what it might turn up. Plus, of course, it would continue the narrative about Stajic. I mean, I think Milicic's biggest problem, as I was saying at the start there, is the fact that everything that the Matildas do now is going to be framed in the narrative arc of Alan Stajic, and his squad is going to be benchmarked against Stajic's squad. The style of play is going to be benchmarked against Stajic's style. The way he uses players, does he experiment like Stajic used to do? Does he stick to the same lineup? All of it is going to be compared all the time, right up to and including the World Cup, to what went before, unless he creates a new paradigm very quickly. If they go out and win all three games 5-0 or something, people pretty soon stop talking about Stage, actually, if that was the case. But, we'll just see.
Well, Lynch, you're conscious of time a little bit here, but before we let you go, can we get a prediction for the Melbourne Derby on the weekend?
It's a tricky one. Normally when City are absolutely dreadful, they pull one out and get a win here. And, whether Warren Joyce needs to witness to keep his job or not, I don't know. They actually are unbeaten in the previous two, 1-1 and drew 1. I reckon, though, even an improved performance might only be good enough to get them a draw. So I think they will improve, but I think it might end up on as even.
Well, there you go. He's honest. He's honest.
Yep.
Honest Lynch.
Lynchy, thank you so much for joining us again here on Evenings on FNR. We look forward to doing it all again same time next week, mate.
Yeah, I don't know what price the draw is. I might have a look. It might be worth a little bet. Or you can probably get draw no bet City, you know, back City to win. But if it's a draw, you get your stake back.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks, Lynchy.
All right. Bye.
Well,
Michael Lynch.
We'll let him sort out his tab account.
Speaking of banking on things, one thing you can bank tonight, the Lion's Den is back on FNR.
Yes.
It starts, they're back for the new year. It's from 8 o'clock immediately after the Pioneers. And for those of you wondering what's happening with the Pioneers tonight, we should rename the show. I think it's going to be the Jim O'Reilly Show, brought to you by FNR.
The Jim O'Reilly Variety Hour.
Look, I can't believe Athos Syrianos has spent the entire last 3 days, along with Lord George Katsanis, finding music in our library. And I've told them, we're not that sort of program. And you know what? They're not listening.
So can't wait.
I've brought the shin pads, so I've prepared. They tell me he's a really tough nut. So I've brought the shin pads. Athos is going to bring the music. Are you panelling?
Ooh, I'll have to arm wrestle with Athos for that one. He might want to be on the Bix Master for this one.
Oh, dear. Well, so the Lion's Den. Make sure you join us if you haven't listened to the program. It's Preston's club show, and it's one of the many club shows that are starting to appear on FNR. About a year and a half ago when we started this idea of bringing football to our audiences, not only across Australia but across the world, we said we'd do it in a different way. We said we'd bring the game as hard and as complicated and as split as it is. We try and bring it together, and we're doing it with an array of club shows now. South have come on board, Preston have come on board, the Knights have come on board. We've got a new Brisbane entity coming very shortly, so it's not going to be just Melbourne centric. It's going to be Australian wide. And if you want to get your club involved, make sure you reach out and speak to us at FNR. So an opportunity to have your very own voice on the station that streams right across Australia and right across the country.
Absolutely. Well, George, you know, as a goalkeeper, and you're a goalkeeper yourself,
yes,
one virtue is patience and concentration.
You spend the whole day doing nothing. It's a bit like waiting for a phone call.
And Eugene Galekovic from Melbourne City has been waiting patiently on the line, yeah, ready to chat to us. Eugene, welcome to the show.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Eugene, do you remember the first game you played for South Melbourne?
Not so much a first game, but I remember that, that first season. You know, I played, I think, 11
Do you remember the game against Colo Colo?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
You had a blinder. No, you had a blinder, and I can, and I'm a tough judge, and I sat there and I said, we've found one. And can I just say, before we start, the career just keeps getting better. Just when I thought a couple of years ago that maybe, you know, your interests had changed, the family man, and a lot of pressures. No, Spider wound you up this year because you've come back. You look like you're fitter than ever before. And I'm knocking on wood here. I don't want to jinx you, but you've been playing really, really well, mate. I've only seen one howler, and you know which one that was. I said to someone, is he trying to head the ball? Eugene Galekovic,
yeah,
don't try and head the ball, all right? Mate, it's been a pleasure to watch you over the years. It's been really fantastic. And what you've done this year and what you're doing this year is a credit to all the old-timers. So bravo, mate. Fantastic. The ripe old age of how many?
37.
If it makes you feel any better, Peter Shilton played till he was 45. Dino Dzoff till about 42. The great Gordon Banks played for a number of years, and he was a fabulous goalkeeper, and we lost him only recently. So, mate, you're a youngster at 37. You've got it all before you, and I hope Spider's got some more tricks to play to keep you wired and ready to fight everybody off.
Yeah, no, it's been great for me.
Tell us about it. What's it been like?
No, it's been good. Rejuvenated me, and it's been a really hard you know, pre-season with him, where you know, training's probably the hardest you know I've ever encountered.
Lost a few kilos.
He wanted me down, and I just had to do it. I just had to get there. So I'm feeling good, and my body's feeling great. So you know, at my age, you kind of only take it one game at a time or a season at a time, and don't worry about anything else. And you know, that's been my focus.
And Eugene, the first derby of the season, it was a pretty memorable performance from you. You kept out quite a few big shots and big chances in the last few minutes. So this fixture would be a pretty special one to come back to.
Yeah, it is. They're always good games to play in. You know, big games, either derbies or finals. You know, every player, you know, thrives on that. Not just Melbourne City boys, but even the Melbourne Victory boys. That's what makes it so good. So, you know, the intensity lifts and everyone gets up for the game. So we're definitely looking forward to it. Our record the last few weeks haven't been great. So it's a good game to have to, you know, get back on a good kind of streak and lead into the finals to get a bit of momentum. And, you know, it's a good game to have, and we're really looking forward to it.
And you've, if for people who've been following the A-League since the very beginning, some people may not realise you've actually a former Melbourne Victory player yourself.
Yeah, the first two and a half years of the A-League, I started off at Melbourne Victory under Ernie. We won a championship and a premiership, so some really good times. But it seems like a long time ago. You know, I've had 10 years at Adelaide and now I'm at City, so it was a long time ago, and the club's changed probably so much. So, you know, different people and different players at the club. I think Broxham was the only player left at the club since my time. Mm. So, yeah, a lot of changes.
And he's a great player.
He is. He's very versatile and a good person to have around the club. So, you know, important to keep players like that, you know, to make your club successful. So, credit to him. But yeah, like I said, the club's changed so much, and it's a kind of a new start for us to try to get some wins on the board leading into the final, so we'll be up for it.
And Eugene, I guess the 10 years buffer at Adelaide, and you know, it was so long ago at Victory that Melbourne Heart or Melbourne City didn't even exist back then. Surely you don't have Victory fans, you know, giving you stick and calling you a turncoat or anything?
You know, it's got less and less over the years. I think probably a lot of Victory supporters probably don't even remember me now since it's been so long. But yeah, the first couple of years, you know, you do cop a little bit, but it's you know, it's all part and parcel of the game. You know, especially the rivalries we've had, especially Adelaide and Melbourne Victory, you cop a little bit more. And now I'm obviously at even a bigger rivalry. So, I think even if I didn't play there, I'd probably be copping stick anyway, being goalkeeper. So you just get used to it, I suppose.
We're talking to Eugene Galakovic, who's the Melbourne City keeper, and he's had a fabulous season, returned to the form that really you know, brought him an awful lot of acclaim, and saw you play for the Socceroos. You've played, you know, as they say, for three big organisations over the years. You're in a unique position to provide some perspective. What's it like, and how different things at Bundoora to what they were like in Adelaide and what they were like in the early days of Victory?
Yeah, well, the Victory days were, you know, a new club. So we kind of started from scratch, and, you know, the club slowly built, got bigger over time. And, you know, when I you know, look at Melbourne City compared to Adelaide, obviously, you know, as players at Melbourne City, we have no excuse not to win games and not to win trophies. I think, you know, everything's there to do that. You know, if you're talking about physios or doctors or gym equipment or you know, anything to look after players, we've kind of got, and you know, it doesn't give us no excuse not to be successful. At Adelaide, it is a smaller club, and you don't get those luxuries and you know, those kind of 1 or 2 percenters. You know, you know, obviously your budgets and stuff like that.
When does their new centre at Marden open? It should be soon, shouldn't it? The Adelaide new centre of excellence.
I haven't heard about that one. I'm not sure if it's for the senior players. I think when I was there, they had one down Elizabeth, down the north, and it was quite new. But, you know, not to the extent of, you know, what we have at City. So, you know, it's just how clubs are. Obviously, in the A-League, you have smaller clubs, you have mid-tier clubs, and you have, and the larger clubs that you know, have the pressure on to be successful. And, you know, that's just the way, you know, every league is, obviously, in the world. And, yeah, that's just how they are. And like I said, you know, we have no excuse not to be successful. And we still have 8 games to go to try to, you know, try to still win some silverware.
Well, Eugene, speaking of pressure, what's the relationship and the dynamic been like this season, having Mark Birigidi behind you? I think a lot of people, when Birigidi signed, expected you to be the understudy, but your performances this season have kept him out of the first team. Does that competition in training with a second keeper really keep you on your toes?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, Dino was here at the start of pre-season, and then he obviously left and Birigidi come in, and it's always good to have, you know, someone pushing you, either, you know, your coach or another goalkeeper. So, you know, improves you as a player. He's pushing and you have to keep improving to keep your spot and, you know, do well in games to kind of keep your spot. So it's not just games, but, you know, everyday training. So, you know, all those things help you to improve your game and try to keep your spot. And, you know, if you make, you know, consecutive mistakes, then the pressure's really on you. So it's really good to have, and it's improved his game and obviously my game too.
Yeah, there's a new CEO at the club. Have you found out? Brad Rouse is stepping in and Scott Munn is heading off to China.
Yeah, correct. Scott's taken over the new team in China through the City Group, and Brad's come in. He's been around the club for a long time. You know, I think he started day one in the heart day. So he's been around.
He certainly
has. Knows what the club's all about.
So. I think it's one of the original core four, and the, yeah. Certainly the tallest member in the City family. You can't miss Brad, and he's got an enormous challenge before him. We've got to get people back to the ground to support you guys, especially when you're playing some of that you know, that football that we know it resides in the side. We've just got to turn it on more often.
Yeah, like you say, he's a great appointment. A lot of challenges ahead for him, but you know, he's a great appointment, and you know, the right man for the job. So yeah, congratulate him, and you know, it's good for the future for the club.
And Eugene, probably fair to say that last week's game against Newcastle was a bit of a low point for the team this season. What's been said in training during the week to try and turn things around, and what do you think you need to correct going into this weekend's game?
Yeah, we've had a few discussions, especially early in the week, just to rectify a few things. You know, keeping, you know, possession of the ball, not giving the ball away too easy, and being set defensively when we do have the ball as well. Just, you know, so if we do turn it over, we're in the right positions. But, you know, the rest of the week's been about, you know, how we're going to challenge victory and what are we going to do to... you know, to try to win the game. So it was disappointing. You know, the fight back wasn't great. You know, everyone's disappointed, and you know, in the end, we didn't even deserve something from the game. So it's a really important week this week to get right, and everyone's focused on victory and you know, trying to, you know, to get a result and 3 points against them is the most important thing for us right now.
And there's been a few rumours swirling in the media about Warren Joyce's future. I mean, do you pay any attention to that as a playing group, or are you just focusing on your own sessions and your own usual preparation, or is it inevitable that some of that sweeps into the squad?
Nah, it's not. You don't really focus on it too much. It's all just speculation, like you said. So, you know, you can't worry about that kind of stuff as players. As you know, you can only really worry about the challenge ahead, and that's the next game. So, you know, as players, it's obviously, you know, you put that aside and just worried about getting the best out of you for the next game on the track to prepare yourself for the game.
Eugene Galakovic on FNR, talking to Josh Parrish and George Tanikian. And the last question we're going to leave you with is, give us an insight about the Bartman. What's he like as a defender? Come on, you can... It's between you and me and just a few others, yeah? What's the Bartman like?
He's a brilliant defender, that's what, if you're trying to say that. He's, he reads the game well, he's very quick. So, you know, if he's out of position, he does you know, cover because of how quick he is. But he's a good guy off the pitch as well. He's one of the boys, and really funny character to have in the change room.
And how have the new boys fitted in the short time they've been with us?
Yeah, brilliant. You know, Shay and Jamie have come at the same time, so they've played a couple of games now, so you know, they're fitting really well, and you know, they've got minutes under the belt, so that helps as well. So you know, they're fit and firing to go as well. They're looking forward to the derby just like anyone, and really enjoying their time at the moment.
Well, Eugene, we're certainly looking forward to this derby. Can't wait. Thank you so much for joining us and here on Evenings on FNR, being so generous with your time and also waiting patiently while we rambled on at the beginning.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Eugene. And by the way, that was a victory man talking to you. Yeah, Josh, you just like to fly the flag, don't you? You like to drop the flag in there.
Well, as the new co-host of For Vox Sake here on
FNR. Yes, exactly right. And you be careful how you say that.
Yes,
thank you.
We've got some broadcast standards to it here too.
I want to give you a kudos to you and the team at For Vox Sake. I actually had one of my Inner Sanctum City men ring me up and say, listen, I thought they did a really good representative job of producing a radio show. I thought, hello, we're talking about the same people, I know. No, so credit to you. Well done.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Look, radio can be fantastic. You don't have to create mayhem. And you can have an awful lot of fun and still get your point across, all right? And For Vuck's Sake is a welcome addition to FNR's programming. And there are a host of other programs we're going to bring in. And we have an array of programs, like the English Premier League show with Chrysostomo and a host of the other boys. And they're doing some terrific work. And I'll tell you what, keep it up. And you don't have to run anything past me before you run it.
Absolutely. Well, Mondays 6 p.m. is when you can tune into FVS, is the safe way to say that.
That's
program.
Correct.
For many years, recorded out of a share house in Brunswick, but now in the professional surrounds of FNR Towers, and it's great to have them on board because...
What's it like in the rarefied air for the newcomers?
Maybe a few nerves at the beginning, of course, walking into this wonderful studio with the big Socceroos and Matildas walls that you see as you walk in. But
did they take a photo?
Yeah, there was a few selfies going around the first time they came in to do a little pre-record. But now they're live, and we'll be introducing talkback calls and in Facebook Live next Monday. So very exciting. And they come with a really dedicated and passionate VUC following, Victory fans.
Yeah, no, they do.
And it's always great to see them get engaged, because that's what it's all about here at FNR, giving everybody a voice and representation in football, including the passionate fans who pack out the terraces every weekend.
I hope tomorrow night they're packed at Pasco Vale when Pasco Vale takes on the Bentley Greens. It's the round two clash. It's a special match, and we're doing a very special outside broadcast.
Yes, we'll be beginning our usual Evenings on FNR show live from CB Smith Reserve in Faulkner. We'll be on location for that hour, and then we'll be taking a quick break before we come back at 7:20 for our pre-match build-up. And during that build-up, you'll be able to hear from Hakim Al Arabi and Craig Foster.
That's right.
Two people who went through the ground.
We'll be doing some interviews.
Two people who went through very different but related ordeals. Hakim, of course, wrongfully imprisoned in Thailand for a few months, and you know, it looked like he was going to be sent back to his native Bahrain, where he's faced persecution and torture. But thankfully, he's managed to have safe passage back to Australia, where he belongs and where he's built his new life with his young wife. And he'll be turning out for Pasco Vale before long, I'm sure.
It'll be very exciting to see how close he is to playing again.
Mm. Well, that's something we'll have to ask him tomorrow.
And Craig Foster's there tomorrow night, so a special opportunity to say thank you. So come out. If you're in the area, make sure you're part of what is a special outside broadcast for FNR, and that's Pasco Vale taking on Bentley Greens. And Bentley Greens, of course, in the last stages of its relationship with John Anastasiadis.
Yeah, a bit of a strange season for him after many years
there. There's a presentation night coming up early March, and I'll be heading down to Kingston Heath to do that presentation evening. And one of the things I'm looking forward to is the interview with Johnny A, which will basically be a thank you and a goodbye, and we wish you all the best for your next journey, which will be with Western United, who are coming to the A-League as early as August.
Next season.
Yeah, October. There you go.
Very exciting, and I'm sure that that knowledge, that brains trust that they're building there with Johnny A as one of the assistants will mean...
Johnny A and Johnny Hutchinson, some really good football people.
Possible pathways for a host of NPL players because Johnny A, he just knows the NPL inside out. Victoria, Queensland, he's recruited a lot of players from there all around the country. So he has a scouting network right up here and you can we'll see some newcomers, I think.
We're almost out of time. We've got an opportunity to talk some more football a little bit later on. Don't forget the Pioneers tonight. We'll rename it, just a special occasion, the Jim O'Reilly Show with G1 and G2. But something else, I'm getting a feeling that football is stirring and a second division is coming.
Yeah, well, there's the new league's working group headed up by Remo Nogaroto.
And live streaming on the NPL and FNR real soon.
Yeah, that's something to look out for and look forward to because every game of NPL Victoria will be streamed this season. Stay tuned for those details and for the Pioneers kicking off at 7 p.m. and then the Lions Den returning to FNR for the first time in 2019. But from us, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.